Hey everyone, and welcome to another Lunch with Norm, Rise of the Micro Brands. I'm Norm Ferrar, aka the Beard Guy. Lunch with Norm. How can I flub up my own title, The Rise of the Micro Brands, especially when we're going to be talking with a specialist in branding and micro brands? But anyways, we are broadcasting to you live on Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn. And if you are watching this on a replay, just skip ahead. And if you're on my profile page, remember you can always go over to my official Facebook page, Norm Ferrar, aka the Beard Guy, where you're going to see lots of video content and bits and pieces of everything surrounding online sales. So, Kelsey, my son.
I'm here.
How are you, sir?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing great. How's Toronto today?
It's not bad. Not bad at all. All right.
So tell everybody.
I have one little thing I want to ask the audience for today, for our podcast, to really, if there's one thing you can do to help us out with this podcast, is go and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. If you can just take a few moments and just subscribe, it does a whole lot of good for us. As well, as Norm likes to say, smash those like buttons and share this video to anyone that you think would enjoy it. And I see we have Christine here listening already. Good morning, Christine.
Good morning.
All right. And as always, we have our Lunch with Norm official website. So all of the guest bios will be up there, videos. And yeah, I think that's pretty much it.
And just to let you know, we received some awesome information from Chris Brewer and from Stephen Pope. So they've given us just the step through. If you listen to the podcast with Chris, I think it was the last podcast we did. He put together a really great do's and don'ts of Amazon. So he also was working with Ecom Fuel to put it all together. So it's well thought out and it's worth a glance. Okay. So that'll be up later on today, I believe, as well as Stephen put up the link. I couldn't get it to work, so we put up three documents on his three phases of keyword research. So just keep that in mind. All right, so I think that's it for the announcements today, right?
Yep.
No more housekeeping?
Here, this way, this one, right here. This link right here, this is the podcast link for Apple Music, so you can just go there, hit the subscribe button, and yeah, that's it for me. Thank you and enjoy the show, everyone.
See you, Kels. All right. So today I'm really excited to be talking with Ken Kubek. And you know what? I told Ken before the podcast that I am going to pronounce his name wrong. I've got a very good friend called Kubrick. So I apologize to Ken in advance. I know it's going to happen. So Ken is one of these guys I see at all sorts of events. I've passed him, you know, and I've never had a chance to talk to him. So I'm really looking forward to talking to him about acquisitions, mergers and acquisitions. He is the VP of acquisitions over at Thrasio. And Thrasio, if you don't know, it is the largest acquirer of Amazon FBA businesses. And I'm 99.9% sure I read this correctly, but it's the fastest growing company to reach $1 billion in sales. How's that? Just a small mom and pop shop. So I can't wait to talk to him. We're going to be, I think that's probably it for now. Sit back, relax, enjoy your cup of coffee, and enjoy the show. So welcome, Ken.
Hey, thanks for having me. And it's great to actually, yeah, connect in person. Well, virtually, but as opposed to just passing each other.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, at these events, everybody's so busy. And I've always, like, you're always surrounded by people. So, you know, I couldn't get in there anyways. I'd have to wait 15 minutes to talk to you. So, But how is it? Where are you? Are you in Boston?
Yeah, the greater Boston area.
Oh, okay. And is it all out of the house right now? Is Thrasio not in the office, or you're all back to work?
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty much full remote. Our offices are open. People go in every now and then just to, you know, socialize a little bit here and there. But, you know, I would say 97% of every, you know, the employee base is working from home or remotely.
Are you one of the original Thrasio employees?
So I'm like one of the first 10 hires. There's probably a handful of founders that were, you know, the original. Their first acquisition was in August of 2018, so almost pretty much 2 years ago. And I joined in November of 18. So wow. We were sitting around a conference table in the back of a Dunkin' Donuts, a little conference room in the back of a Dunkin' Donuts in a suburb outside of Boston. So it's been a fun journey thus far.
Did you acquire the Dunkin' Donuts?
No, we don't do food and beverage.
So how did you get started with them?
Yeah, so I actually, very fortuitous circumstance for myself. My background, I've spent probably 13 years in investment management. I was an equities analyst and portfolio manager, so I was picking stocks at a few firms in Boston. Got burnt out on Wall Street, and then I actually pivoted to the startup space, and I got connected with an entrepreneur in Boston that owned a few businesses, one of which was a software company specialized in Amazon sellers, and he also owned his own Amazon business. So I joined up with him, became the CEO, ran the Amazon business for 2 years, and then randomly went on an interview, and the person I interviewed with was actually the neighbor and best friend of one of the co-founders of Thrasio. And I, you know, told him what I was doing, and it was for an equities analyst job. And he's like, well, you know, I want to connect you with my neighbor. He's doing something great on Amazon. I don't really know what it is, but he's a tremendous guy. He's very successful. You guys should talk. So that was, we set up a call, and I spoke with Carlos, one of the co-CEOs and co-founders, and we hit it off, and it kind of spiraled quickly from there. And I wound up joining to run acquisitions.
So I'm wondering, first of all, how can you handle scale? You're going in 2 years to $1 billion.
Yeah. So yeah, to be clear on that, I wish it was a billion. We're valued at a billion. The company.
Oh, okay. Valued at a billion.
Yeah. So we're, it's the fastest profitable company to reach $1 billion. So there's been companies that have reached $1 billion, but, you know, they weren't actually making money. So we're well over $350 million in revenue, and we'll be close to, we'll probably surpass $500 million annual run rate by the end of this year.
So $350 million. Same question.
Yeah.
How did you prepare to scale yourself like that?
There's no way to prepare for that. We like to say we're building the plane as we're flying it. We've gone from, one to two acquisitions, three acquisitions, and at that pace, you can basically, people can wear many different hats and help scale. But then you need processes at the end of the day to really kind of pour gasoline on the fire. And that's what we spent the last 18 months really ironing out SOPs, processes, everything from how you transfer an account over to, setting up advertising campaign, like everything that's required to, managing a supply chain. We're selling over 6,000 products today. And you can imagine the supply chain complexity from ordering inventory to managing 3PLs to getting inventory in Amazon, et cetera. And so it was really, right? I mean, we started to do the processes, and then we just hired a lot of people. I mean, the company today has over 200 full-time heads in the U.S. I think we're now across 15 or 20 different cities in the U.S. Three main hubs, Boston, New York, and Houston. And then we have another 150 people overseas. So Pakistan, Philippines and others, a few other European cities as well. So, you know, with scale, you gotta add bodies and people that have expertise in doing this, and then they can bestow that knowledge on to other people. And that's what's really led us to get to the point we're at. And it's been really exciting. I mean, for my team, and on the deal side, you know, for instance, in Q2, we closed 17 deals in one quarter, which is a pretty amazing feat. We're trying to eclipse that every quarter sequentially.
Well, before we go to the next question, I just wanted to give a couple shout outs here to Tanushri, to Mohammed, over to Irene, you're in Malaysia. Thanks for tuning in. Over to Art Tech, and Art Tech's got something here. Is it a question, Kels?
No, I think it's just like a little ad, I think.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. So Art Tech, don't do that. All right. We love comments. We love suggestions. And you can definitely go over to the page. And if you have an interesting business or something, tell us all about it. All right. So let's get into, what are you looking for? Or is there a specific niche that you look at?
Well, I think that's what's really interesting about us is we're kind of category and product agnostic. So what we really look for is leadership positioning within the Amazon ecosystem. So I kind of call it R cubed. So it's reviews, rating, and rank. So do you have the product review quantity that has the social proof to put you within the kind of top five of your specific product category? Do you have the product rating that suggests high quality? You know, we love looking for high quality products that can, you know, maintain that leadership positioning, and often look to improve on those products as well. And then ranking. So, you know, Amazon at the end of the day is a search engine, and we look for products that have established themselves in Amazon's flywheel and that rank really well for high volume relevant search terms, both organically and, you know, and have a prominent position within sponsor ads as well. So, I mean, we own products across, you know, pets, auto, home and kitchen, health and beauty, sports and outdoors, you know, business related products, et cetera. You know, we've done 70 plus acquisitions since the founding of the company. So that's, you know, there's probably over 80 brands in there across all those different categories.
So what can an Amazon seller do from the beginning to help companies like yours take a look at what they're doing? So a lot of companies have never gone through an exit before. Amazon may be their second bit. They might've been from real estate or insurance, yeah, or something different. Now they're into this product, you know, trying to build these micro brands. What do they have to look for? What are you looking for or any advice that you can give them to help build their companies properly?
Yeah, I mean, look, just with most things in life, it's always helpful to kind of start with the end in mind and, you know, work backwards from there. So if you are planning to exit, right, I think you do things a little bit differently versus if you're just trying to, you know, see if it works, right? And I think there's always that time period in the beginning where it is, let's see if it works. But once you start to get traction with the business and the products, and then you shift your mindset to, oh, actually, this could be a very lucrative exit for me, an endeavor, versus just, you know, having a hobby or a project or, you know, just giving it a go. The biggest thing is honestly knowing the numbers. So, you know, if you're not financially, you know, minded or geared towards, you know, the numbers, you know, bring somebody onto the team or, you know, find an advisor or somebody that is, because that's one of the biggest things is really knowing your numbers, your unit level economics, making sure that you're actually building a profitable business. I mean, you know, I can every week or two, I talk to somebody and I ask them how much money they're making. They're not really sure. They just know they're getting paid out by Amazon every 2 weeks. And then, you know, so they might not even be making money, or they might be making half of what they actually think they are. It happens all the time. So I always encourage sellers to really, you know, own the numbers. It's your business. You're putting a lot of your, you know, personal balance sheet at risk. And whether you're, you know, taking a mortgage out of your second mortgage on your home, or you're levering up through credit card debt, or taking loans from Amazon, or pay, you know, payabilities of the world, et cetera. You know, it's a big endeavor, and it's a lot of risk. So, you know, I definitely think that knowing the numbers is tantamount. And the second thing is, I think, treat it like a business. Norm, as you mentioned, a lot of people, it's a secondary job, but once it gets to the scale that warrants, you know, the time and effort and dedication, treating it like a real business. I think, you know, the most successful sellers that we've seen, that I've talked with, have that mindset that it's not a get rich quick scheme. It's they invest time, resources, people, energy into building these brands, and it shows. And those are the businesses that ultimately, you know, wind up selling to enable a buyer.
So I bet you love the company that comes to you with receipts in a shoebox.
Yeah, I mean, look, so one of the beauties of the Amazon ecosystem and acquiring FBA businesses is there's a canonical source of data in Seller Central. So, you know, our team, our diligence team is incredible. And, you know, we've actually built a script where we can, you know, download and parse all transaction reports and build a P&L basically within an hour or two. Once we get access. So we do that for sellers. We talk to sellers that are like, hey, I don't have anything. I have no financials. I honestly don't know how much money I'm making. You know, we can get access, limited access, Seller Central, and build that P&L for them, you know, oftentimes within a few hours, and be like, all right, well, here's how much money you're making. And, you know, and talk them through and explain, you know, walk them through all the line items, et cetera. So I think we're a little different than that. We're willing to work with sellers. We understand, you know, both of our co-founders are entrepreneurs and have started numerous businesses themselves. So they have as an organization, we have a soft spot for entrepreneurs in general. So, you know, we really work with sellers and try and, you know, provide a great service to them, even if we don't wind up acquiring. You know, I think it's important. You know, I come from a background of investing and, you know, digging deep into the financials. So I think it's important for me that people know, you know, where their businesses stand, you know, how profitable they are, et cetera. So we're definitely willing to help in any way we can.
Right. So sometimes it's more long term. You go in, you evaluate what's going on. And then just by kind of investing that time, the brand can go back in 6 months, a year, 18 years, that might be on the table for you to acquire.
Yeah, absolutely. It happens all the time. I mean, look, we, you know, we don't strong arm anybody. We don't, you know, say, hey, you got to sell to us now, or you're not going to sell. Oftentimes I recommend the sellers if they're on a great growth curve and great growth trajectory, and they're really hesitant and dragging their feet and, you know, deciding whether or not to sell, I tell them, hey, it's probably, you know, one of the biggest decisions of their lives up to this point, and it's not to be taken lightly. And, you know, what I also say, it's similar to, you know, having kids or you getting married. There's no perfect time to, you know, make those decisions. Oftentimes it's a leap of faith that's, you know, going to be okay on the other end. So, yeah, we work with sellers. Sometimes sellers aren't, you know, at the scale that we look for. So we typically look for businesses doing at least $1 million in revenue, kind of all the way up to actually 100 million in annual revenue. So they might be like just below that and working their way, or they come to us and say, hey, I want to sell in a year or two, you know, similar to the question you asked, what do I need to do to put my business and myself in position to execute on that? So yeah, we've been in the market for a long time. I've probably looked at over 600 businesses myself over the past 2 years. So I have a really good sense of how profitable businesses are, what the margin profile should look like for your average Amazon seller.
So let's go back to something you talked about, and that was knowing your numbers. So Amazon sellers will talk about their PPC numbers. They'll talk about this number. They'll talk about that number. But just basic business numbers, you know, taking an accounting course or just to understand your financial statements. A lot of people have no clue on how to read a financial statement. That's a bad thing. you have, and one of the things that you can do, it does not have to be difficult. What you can, like Tim France, I just saw Melissa from Empowery pop up in the comments. Yeah. And one of the members of Empowery is Tim Francis. Tim Francis has a course. It's like it's a small course, just knowing your numbers, your stats, what you need to know to run your business. And you don't have to go and take, you know, a year-long course. Just understand that.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, I mean, lemonade stands examples that are out there. I think most people at least have some sort of, you know, okay, well, it cost me this much. These are my fees. This is my kind of net profit. But I think, you know, one of the things that the second level of that is cash flow management and how that impacts your profitability, right? And your balance sheet. So, you know, your profit statement, your balance sheet, your cash flow statement are all tied together, and really trying to understand those imaginations between the three, I think is like the next level of just, all right, I generated this amount of profit. And also just thinking through what the economics of selling your business actually mean. You know, I hear all the time from sellers, they're like, oh, well, I could run the business for 3 years and, you know, make back what the offer is or build some sort of semblance of that. And, you know, that might be true in theory, but actually in practice, if you're growing, you need to keep reinvesting the capital back in the business, and you might be making $1 million a year in profit, or, you know, $500,000 a year in profit on paper. But then I ask them, well, how much are you actually paying yourself? And they're like, oh, well, if I didn't take a salary last year. It's like, okay, well, then you're not actually making that money back and putting it in your pocket versus walking away with, you know, $2 million. Check in kind of 45, 60 days. That's a much different, right, value proposition and, you know, framework of thinking through the economic value of the business and what the business is generating on paper versus kind of what's actually hitting your bank account.
Yeah, so many courses, or if you go to many events, they, rather than talking about your net profit, they come out on stage and they'll talk about, I sold $250,000 this month, but what did you make on it?
Exactly.
You know, did you lose?
Yeah.
And I've seen that a lot too. Like, you know, just working with brands that, oh my gosh, like, what did you do here? You know, you shouldn't be in a lost position.
Yeah. You can't spend revenue.
Oh.
You got to have the cash flow.
Exactly. So what are a couple of tips that you can give on cash flow?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think so. One of the biggest things that I always tell sellers is that, you know, don't diversify too quickly on your products. Right. So, you know, the businesses that I've seen that have gotten in trouble financially are, you know, entrepreneurs that, you know, maybe they're just great product people and they have tons of ideas of launching new products. And they hit 1, 2, 3, and then they go out and they launch 5, 10 new products. And then they're basically starting to dilute their cash flow conversion cycle down because you're paying cash for inventory, and then your inventory isn't turning as quickly as the money is due back to your suppliers. And that's what leads to, you know, a cash flow crunch. And, you know, I always tell, I did this when I was investing, and it's, you know, ride your winners. You know, it's just like, horse betting, anything, you know, when you have a winner and you have, you know, a product that is your hero product, don't be afraid to continue to invest in that. Maybe launch variations off of that, a different sizing, different colors, whatever it may be. Really build up that hero product. And then once you get it to a position where it's in that leadership, you know, spot on Amazon, then you start to launch different, you know, maybe derivative products or, you know, 2 or 3, but start small. Don't just blow out an entire, you know, build a brand. Think you're going to build a brand by launching 15, 20 products within a segment. I think that's a big mistake that I see a lot of sellers make. So, you know, really focusing in on and ensuring that the unit economics are there, right? I mean, factor in advertising spend, how much you're going to advertise, what is the, you know, the static advertising spend going to be once you have launched and you moved out of that kind of launch phase. We look at products based on life cycles, like where they're at in their life cycle. Are they launch? Are they growth? Are they, you know, kind of, quote, you know, stable, growing in line with Amazon? Knowing that will lead you to decide how much you should be investing, both time and energy in the products.
Yeah, we recently, and I know he's going to be listening, but one of the things, one of my clients has a great product line, three products that are great. He paid his Amazon tax for the first product, learned from those mistakes, and made the other two very profitable.
Yeah.
What's happening now is, well, why don't we diversify the line, double it up? Now, it's only six products, but the problem is the products are very expensive, ate up the cash flow, and what's happening right now? Well, you can't market the product properly. We want to get into gift guides. Well, we don't have the money for that. We want to get into this. We want to get into that. I mean, it's fourth quarter. Here's what we want to do to, you know, help market, do the advertising, make sure you have the proper inventory. And it's going to be a tight cash crunch. So if you're listening, and I know you probably are, sorry for bringing it up, but I didn't say your name.
No, it's true. And, you know, it's, I think, you know, in today's e-commerce world, right? I mean, we deal with this internally at a high strategic level within Thrasio. It's, you know, there's a million different directions you could run with the product. Like once you have the product, right, you can launch it on other Amazon marketplaces. You could try and take it into Walmart.com. You could try and take it into brick and mortar. You can set up a D2C site and then run ads against your D2C site. You can run ads on Facebook, Google, Instagram, YouTube, video pre-rolls to direct back to Amazon, or do you direct it back to your D2C site? I mean, there's this, you know, there's like so many different directions that a seller can go into. And I think a testament to our leadership team is we really stayed focused on, you know, let's be the best Amazon operators that are out there globally. And
right.
Once we check that box, let's start to then move. Okay, what's the next, right? Like we're taking a big picture approach to what does e-commerce look like globally over the next 3 to 5 years, and looking at the distribution channels and trying to figure out what's the split going to be. And then we're kind of building out our expertise in lockstep with, okay, this is probably going to be the biggest pie. This is the second biggest piece of the pie. This is the third, right? So I would encourage sellers to do that too. And, you know, like just own your product, you know, just maximize your first product, maximize your second product, right? And keep going down the line versus just, you know, throwing out, you know, capital and all these areas that you don't know what your return is going to be. You know, focused on your highest return on investment opportunities first. And then once you have discretionary income to try growth, you know, kind of growth, you know, capital, that's when you try the different things. But I just see it all too often where people just really take their eye off the ball from their winners. And that's what usually winds up stalling out businesses.
They get comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, oh, this is on autopilot. We all know you can't do that in Amazon.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
For sure.
Live in the discomfort. And that's what creates the growth.
Okay. So I just want to say hi to Michelle. Hey, welcome from New Jersey. Melissa, welcome. That's empowering. Irene, you're back. And let me see. Did I miss anybody? Oh, there's a question.
Yeah. So Irene is saying, focus on one product, scale, or maximize before looking into diversification. Let the first baby grow to start walking by itself before having the second baby. It's all about the profit. She says, please correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. So when you're when you are going to be launching, what do you think about this? So you've got a profitable product. So I'll just use mine, bar of soap.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've got this bar of soap and it sells okay. Let's say it's Dead Sea Mud. So then you repurpose it. If it's working for a general niche, then maybe target people that would, well, this is a very specific one, but mudders, people who love to go into those crazy obstacle course, get covered in mud. And then, you know, you can start to repurpose your product. And I don't see a lot of people doing it. I see them packaging up a product, selling it out to one niche, but they forget about these other niches where they could take other market share. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I think it's a great idea. And that's one of the things that, you know, our team does really well is, right, think outside the box, right? I mean, we've been, you know, COVID has created, you know, a lot of disruption across the economy in many different sectors and areas, right? And I think if you, right, like a perfect example would be like kids doing school and people working from home, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we've repurposed a few products to target that market. You know, we have like an anti-fatigue mat for standing that typically was like commercial use, right? Kitchens and things like that, that, you know, you repurpose and you start targeting like homeschool, you know, work from home, like all these different keywords that have been really, you know, growing exponentially on a monthly basis within Amazon. And repurposing. So I think, you know, it's a lot of work and to think through it and to start to do that. But, you know, I think that the set it, it just goes back to the don't set it and forget it, right? Constantly be thinking through how you could serve customers, you know, what's the customer set, how do you expand your customer set, and how can you best serve them? And that traditionally has been a great recipe for consumer products over time.
I'm curious, I've happened to work with Thrasio in the past and had no idea how big the company was. But one thing I did recognize, it was about four or five of your brands that we were looking at, but every single brand that you brought out, it was like going to a Porsche dealer. It was beautiful. Every single brand looked great. It had all the boxes marked. The images were incredible. Everything everybody talks about. Now, I'm wondering when you first see a brand, I'm not going to mention any of them, but when you first see a brand and you go and buy them, is it like going to the Chevy dealer and then you take it to your team and they upgrade it to the Porsche dealer? Because I could tell you when I look at one of your brands, they're that good.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, one of the, well, first of all, thank you. That's a hats off to our incredible creative team. Which is probably one of the largest teams in the company, to be honest with you. And I agree that they do an amazing job. So, yeah, I mean, look, the platform, you know, we built a platform. And when we set out to do it, we looked at, okay, what is required to be a top Amazon seller and have successful products and to buy leadership products and keep the leadership momentum? And, you know, right, so you look at, you know, and this is how we've kind of organized our functional teams is, you know, you need to be best in class in supply chain, you know, being able to, you know, as a lot of sellers have experienced this year, be nimble, have great reliable partners overseas, have duplicative, you know, partners, et cetera, operations, day-to-day operations, creative, marketing, and then finance. So, you know, when we look at businesses to acquire, you know, we definitely look at that, right? We look at the copy, we look at photos. Do they have, you know, the five pictures? Do they have two lifestyle images? Do they have videos? Or, you know, how is their enhanced brand content? And that's another thing that I always tell sellers too, like spend the $5,000 to $10,000, $15,000 really investing in the photos and the content and in videos. The return on that is tremendous. And, you know, I oftentimes see, you know, if it's a leg massager and the pictures are photoshopped and the people have 4 foot long shins and you're like, you know, it's like you're, you know, someone's researching a $300 product and the pictures are photoshopped.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's no way you're going to have a good conversion rate. And so, I mean, that's all you have to sell, right, is the visual representation on Amazon. And, you know, that's another thing that I always tell people, like, take the time, take the money to really invest in that, because you could easily, you know, just double your business by doubling your conversion rate from 5% to 10%. And I think it's really not that hard of big of a lift to actually to execute on that. You know, we have like world-class creative talent. You know, we have our own photographers, videographers, you know, copywriters, et cetera, on staff. We're fortunate enough to, you know, be at the scale where we can do that. But it is, I mean, it's, you know, the, we have, you know, we call it a conveyor belt, and every acquisition kind of goes through this, you know, 500 plus checkpoint when we start doing diligence on it to making the account over and managing it internally. And the creative is obviously a big piece of that, but it's also, you know, checking package sizing, making sure everything is in the right category and being, you know, charged right by Amazon. I mean, there's just a number of things that are required to operate at a very high level.
When I was selling a business, I guess I killed myself out of a deal almost, because they actually came around at night and saw that I was working at night. And they kept one of the reasons they came up to me and they talked to me, and they said that this was counterproductive. That, and this goes back, people ask me about delegating and SOPs and all that and making things automated and scalable. But basically, it was, you can't build the business around yourself. If you're putting in all this time and energy, then the numbers aren't adding up. You know, it's, you've put them in, we're going to have to put it into other people. They'd rather see the light go off at 5 o'clock and have it delegated somewhere else. So how does that affect it? There's so many people, a lot of new people listening to this podcast, as well as seasoned people, but they're doing everything themselves. What do you suggest?
Yeah. I mean, look, delegation for your own sanity, as Norm, I'm sure you can attest, right? You know, you got to, if you're going to build something sustainable, you have to avoid burnout, right? I mean, there's, you know, it's probably, you know, top five reasons that people sell their Amazon business is, I'm just sick of it. I'm sick of dealing with Amazon. You know, I'm sick of being in the arena fighting day to day. And if you delegate some of that stuff, you free up the emotional capacity to, you know, to rise above the day-to-day fighting and, you know, frustrations, and think bigger picture and with the strategy and how do you best grow your business for your ultimate outcome, which could be a sale or, you know, continue to scale it, et cetera. And look, we're a perfect example. I mean, your question of how do you manage, you know, 75 brands, over 6,000 ASINs, it's delegation, right? We started as a small team, and then that grew, and it's, you know, 40 times what it was, you know, even almost 18 months ago. And I think it's dumping, right? Like, if you're an owner, you have to do a brain dump of everything, you know, everything you do, and then look at the least critical pieces, right? That's not going to break the machine, and start small, right? Start delegating those pieces. And then over time, you're going to get more and more comfortable. From an acquisition standpoint, it depends. I mean, some businesses, you know, some sellers have, you know, a team of 15 people, and that might be a little too much for someone like a buyer that's buying an Amazon business for the first time, or maybe they bought one or two. That might be intimidating to be like, oh, wow, I can't take on a team of 10 or 15 VAs, that's just not what I'm looking to do. I think, you know, people like the appeal of, you know, one person working 5 to 10 hours. I mean, I always laugh when I see, you know, brokers saying, oh, the owner works 5 hours a week on the business. And it's like, yeah, maybe. But, you know, you didn't see the 60, 70 hour work weeks that were required for the first 3 years to get it to where it is. Right, documenting the SOPs, hiring VAs, training people, putting out the fires, etc. You know, a new owner that has never done this before is going to have to work the 40 to 60 hours a week. It's just, you know, there's no way around it. So I think it's, you know, it's part of growth as a business owner and an entrepreneur. And if you can't delegate, you know, you're just going to naturally have a ceiling on how far you can take something.
What are your thoughts on hiring? Well, the wages. So I've heard a lot of people very proud on stage saying, oh, I can get somebody for $2 an hour, you know, over in the Philippines. And all I have to pay is X number of dollars a month compared to paying higher. So either hiring in the, I found a big difference hiring in my local town. So yep. I could actually have hands on. I've had experience with hiring high quality people that don't necessarily have to be full time. They could just be more experts, paying them a little bit more, having a few more people that you have to talk to. And then I've also worked with the people that were around $3 or $4. And, you know, I just feel that there's a different way of doing it. If you pay too cheap, you're going to get the cheap results. So how are you guys delegating? Are you all in-house in the U.S., in Boston area?
Yeah, no. So, you know, we're, let's see, like I said, we have probably, I think, up to like maybe 215 people full-time here in the U.S. across Boston, New York, and Houston, and a couple other just like little satellite cities. And then, you know, we do have teams overseas. So we have an office in Manila handling a lot of our customer service, but we, you know, it's captive to Thrasio. So they're part of the team. You know, they're part of the culture. We have a, you know, a great manager over there. It's our team working hand in hand with them. It's, you know, I think when you, there's certain tasks, right, that have, like, when you aggregate them all together, they add tremendous value to the organization, but like as a one-off task, it might not be the best use of somebody's time who's, you know, paying themselves $100,000 or $150,000 or whatever it may be a year, right? Like it's, you know, I liken it to, you know, I have four kids, busy household, you know, four kids under 10. I work full-time, my wife works full-time. You know, it's probably not the best use of my time to spend 4 hours on a weekend cutting my grass. Right. There'll be a time for that, particularly when my oldest son can start doing it himself in a few years. Right. But like my return on time is, you know, it needs to be something that's worthwhile to dedicate my personal time to doing and finding the value and return on it. Right. I'd rather, you know, take them for a bike ride on a Saturday morning or, mm-hmm. you know, ride to the bagel shop or something like that. That's much more valuable to me than, you know, cutting my grass. So I think there's certain things, right. And like I said, tasks and where they you might not ascribe the highest value to them, but they still matter. And, you know, having somebody that has oversight over the outsourcing is really important too. So you don't want to just outsource it and not, you know, think about it and just trust that it's being done. You still always have to, I think, you know, manage, you know, the work that you actually outsource. And it's oftentimes it's looking at the end result, right? Versus hand holding during the process. And I think, yeah. You know, and we do that internally. I mean, we do that with everybody. So it's like we give people a lot of latitude to experiment and try things. And oftentimes that's where the great ideas come from.
Some of the lessons I've learned over time, especially when delegating overseas, one thing that a lot of people forget, these people that you're hiring overseas, if you're getting it off of Upwork or if you're getting it off of these other channels, FreeUp has a pretty much a set price, but, and you can negotiate that, but it's a better quality vetted person. However, if you're going into Upwork or onlinejobs.ph and you're getting these people that will work for $2 or $3, one of the things you want to keep in mind is that if somebody comes in at $2.10 or $3.10, then you're probably going to lose that person to that job and they'll just say they have a medical emergency. Then the other part to this is they have to live. And these people, your contractors, your VAs, by keeping them down and not being able to allow them to really have that job security, that could come back to bite you. So I always like to pay a little bit higher. So a couple of dollars more. Our average person probably over in the Philippines is about $6. We also And I'm not touting what we do, but I'm just telling I lost a lot of hair over this. Matter of fact, all except here. but you know, if you're new to hiring people, don't be afraid to go out and make sure you get a screenshot of, you know, how fast their internet is. If they need a phone, get them a phone because they're going to be communicating that way. Or if they need a computer, especially in the Philippines, if they're with you for a year or so, buy them a bloody generator. Because you know that they're going to have power outages. But this way, what you're doing is you're really building a team that'll grow with you. And then when it comes over to you, Ken, and you're looking at the way that this is now, you've got your SOPs, you've got your delegate, you've delegated it properly. People are more likely to be loyal. Then I think you would take a more serious look at it, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, I think... You know, anybody that has a tight-knit team are typically those are the organizations that win over time. So I think, you know, again, as a buyer, you know, we have all those capabilities in-house, so we don't, you know, we usually don't take on the team. We don't onboard teams that we, you know, businesses that we acquire. But I think a lot of sellers probably do, or buyers, I'm sorry, like probably do, especially, again, if it's their first time buying it. An Amazon business or an e-com business, having that kind of turnkey plug and play team in place adds tremendous value ultimately to your exit, I would think.
Now, I like what Constantine said, you know, first automate and then try to delegate. And yeah, if you can, if you have that experience, yeah, absolutely. True. You know, that's a great point. And there's a couple of more comments here. Kels, can you read them out?
Yeah, I'll read them. So this is from Janelle. So it's possible to grow this business without working full time and delegating a ton. You may grow slower, but it's still possible to achieve success. This is my personal experience as a stay-at-home mom who prioritizes my son. And then we have another comment from Irene. Honestly, plan to start DIY. Getting to delegate is sure good as it expands at the very least. I laid the foundation myself and well-versed with the base rather than dependent without much knowledge.
Very good. Okay, so let's see. We're winding down here. Let's see, a couple of other things. Two companies equal. They're basically 50-50. You're looking at them. What would be one thing that would push you over the fence, or is there one thing that would push you over the fence if they're both considered equal?
That's a great question. Probably, you know, like I would say, you know, this is a people business, and the sellers themselves and how they go about the process. You know, we like to really partner with the sellers, and, you know, we structure our deals that way to allow them to participate in the future upside of the brand. So, you know, the sellers that are really passionate about the products and the brand they've built, I think that always tips the favor, because we know that, you know, they've done everything with, you know, kind of the integrity and the ultimate, you know, goal of driving a brand and a product forward in mind. And it just instills a little bit more comfort on our side, outside of just things that are different about the brands.
Right. Yeah. Right. Okay, so what about the very last thing? Is there any last tip or something that you can provide Amazon sellers as a takeaway?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I just think inventory management is going to be big over the next, you know, quarter or two. You know, we've heard, you know, potential, you know, I think other people have as well, but, you know, lockdown of new shipment plans in Q4. So I would just trust people to kind of get as much inventory in there as you can now, over the next, you know, 30, 45 days. I think Q4 is going to be, you know, obviously massive. So I think just I think it's going to be a tantamount to win over the next couple of years, inventory management, and logistics. So if you're not strong in that category, I would recommend brushing up on it.
Great. I did think of one other question. So when you're looking at a company, what if if they're on only Amazon, what's the difference? Again, coming back to, let's use the same numbers. Okay. So they're both $1 million sellers. They have the same numbers, but one is multi-channel. They might have a Shopify store and an Amazon store. The other one's strictly Amazon. Does that weigh on the numbers?
Not for us. Yeah. Not for us. It might for other buyers. I mean, look, it depends on if the D2C is actually profitable. You know, I use the phrase diversification. Like, I think sellers, entrepreneurs often think they're diversifying, but it's what I call it, diversification. It's like the unit, oftentimes it's hard to run a profitable D2C business. I mean, you look at all the ones that have scaled up, it's really about your lifetime value of your customer and how much it is required to acquire the customer. And if you know that and you can actually prove out favorable D2C unit economics, that's valuable, right? I mean, you own the customer versus not owning the customer on Amazon. I mean, there's definitely, right? Like if you grow a D2C brand to 10 million as D2C only versus an Amazon brand, that's inherently probably going to be more valuable in the marketplace. So if you can do it, it's great. But if it's not going to be profitable, don't do it.
Yeah, I had Dave Gimes from Paw.com on Monday now. He grew he wasn't even on Amazon, only on Shopify, doing Facebook ads. He grew it in 4 years to $16 million. He's just going on to Amazon now.
Yeah,
that's awesome. As an afterthought.
Yeah. Well, I get that. I've seen that too. And it's people, they start to see, branded search and, people are like, you start getting customer service. I don't see you on Amazon, et cetera. And, it's where the consumers are right nowadays. And kind of something crazy, 65% or 70% of consumers start their search on Amazon. And it's just it's probably, the most frictionless, buying path for consumer product that's out there today. So that's why people go there. Right. I find myself, I got to go to a site, enter in my credit card information. It's like, let's just, see if it's on Amazon first and one click, right? But that's amazing. Yeah, I think you're going to hear more and more of that. And that's a testament to the brand he's built, obviously. I think it's going to be interesting to see over time how brands adapt on where they launch, et cetera. So that's cool, though.
Yeah, it is. He was full of information. So how do people get a hold of you?
Yeah, so LinkedIn, Facebook, or just email me directly, ken@thras.io, thras.io. Always happy to talk. We got a great team as well. Or our website, which actually is getting refreshed this week, so that's exciting. We've had the same website for the past 2 years. We're excited to, share some more details and some seller stories and things. So hopefully over the next few days that'll relaunch. So our website is also a contact us form on there, et cetera.
Well, once we get back to the events, I'll have to bump into you and actually buy you a coffee or something.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'm looking forward to it. As I mentioned, 4 kids at home and starting to crawl the walls a little bit.
Well, you know what? When you're on next time, you might look like this. So
yeah,
just saying. All right, Ken. Well, thank you for being on the podcast. And it was great. Lots of information you provided. I'm just looking down here. Irene, Janelle, yes, thank you. We're providing as much information and content as we can. Just keep listening. And with people like Ken coming on, he's killing it. So thank you, Ken. And hopefully we talk to you soon. All right. So thank you, everybody, for enjoying to listening to the podcast today. I hope you enjoyed it. Once again, if you want to hear the full episodes or some other content, we have it all on Norm Farrar, a.k.a. The Beard Guy. If you want to watch the video rather than listen, just hop over to their YouTube channel. And Kelsey, come on back.
I'm back.
All right.
Hello, everyone.
So tell everybody.
Okay, so if you want to help out our podcast, the number one thing you can do is subscribe on either Apple Podcast or Spotify Podcast. I even put the link right here. If you can see.
You did.
Right here. Yes. So made it super easy. You can search it on your phone. It would be great. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, just please like and share. Tag a friend. Don't keep us a secret. And yeah, I think that's about it.
All right. Who do we have on next? Last thing Kevin, we're going to be just talking shop. Kevin King's going to be on Friday, and that should be good. He was on the last time. It was one of our most popular episodes, so we'll see what he's up to. But one other thing we want to ask people is if you enjoyed today's show, or if you'd like to see some other people on here, that maybe there's some content that you haven't heard about or want to know more about, shoot it over to us. Shoot us over people you'd like to talk to, and we'll try to get them on. As well as we have a newsletter, you can go to Lunch with Norm, or you can go to I Know This Guy, normferrar.com, and you can subscribe to it. I promise you, like I said last episode, it doesn't suck. It's got great content. Yes, it doesn't. That's our new tagline. So it has great content about online marketing, social media marketing, digital marketing. Great content in there. Lots of it's rich media as well as articles that we've written and curated. So check it out. And I think that's probably pretty much for this week.
So. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you, Marina, Michelle, Irene. They're all saying thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for listening. All right. So tune in every Monday, Wednesday, Friday at noon Eastern Standard Time for another episode of Lunch with Norm. And what are you pointing at?
Our next guest. I think we touched on the first name, but do you want to see Kevin who's coming King. On Friday? Yes. All right, talking shop. So it'll be talking about Amazon. If you have any questions, this is a great opportunity for you to throw them in the event section on our Facebook page. And yeah, thank you for watching, everyone.
All right. Yes, thank you. And see you next time on Lunch with Norm. Lunch with Norm.